I haven't started the recording. It is Wednesday, December 2nd. It is now 3:15 instead of 3 o'clock because we have taken aim and done check-ins before we turned on the recording. So obviously, this is Elaine. but we're just starting to get into the lesson for the day. So timing is perfect, and you're right on time for those of you listening later. So what I'm saying is that the topic for today is using systems and structures, which is one of the cornerstones or the critical response areas. And it's complicated because it's probably the most complicated piece that we deal with in this realm. In part because it's sort of the first thing everybody wants, right? Everybody wants to do systems and structures. Tell me how to do this. Give me a system. Give me a tool. Give me a strategy. Give me a way to manage it, right? It's always the first thing that we're asking. It's that everything, all the experts tell us to put systems in place and be consistent. But systems are complicated, really complicated. And in fact, everything we've done for the last several weeks up until now has been leading to just this conversation about systems and structures. So we're going to sort of look at them in two ways. One is that when we use a system and structure, we need to make sure that we're doing it in the context of all of the other cornerstones. So we want to make sure that we're not creating a system or structure before we've considered the extent to which the brain is activated, where we are in terms of positive parenting and focusing on strengths and playing to successes, and setting realistic expectations. So those three components have really got to be addressed in order for a structure or a system, and I'm using those terms interchangeably, to be effective. So that's the first place I want to sort of just put it in context, that we only want to use systems and structures in the context of the other cornerstones. And then the other piece about them is we want to make sure we know really clearly what we're putting a system in place for, why we're using it, right? We have this tendency to throw structures at it, to, you know, make sure, well, the kid's got to use her planner, right? Or she's got to use a calendar, or I set it up for her to do it, why won't she do it, right? But we've got to be really clear, what's the purpose of the system we're putting in place? What are we trying to accomplish with it? That's where taking aim comes in. And then we want to make sure that we've got their buy-in. So it's not enough to have a system that's named if our child isn't part of the process of creating it or bought into using it. So an example of that, I was talking to some clients yesterday or this morning who were talking about a 12-year-old boy, and they wanted to have his homework done by 2 o'clock on Sunday because he was meeting with a tutor or somebody. And they had decided that they wanted all of his homework done by 2 o'clock. But he was arguing and saying, I don't understand why it all has to be done. Why can't just the lit and history be done, but not the math and the science? And so they didn't have his buy-in. So the system that they were putting in place was never going to work until he was part of it, particularly because he was a somewhat older kid, right? And so he needs to be part of that solution. So buy-in is a piece of it. Another piece about effective solutions is you want to make sure that they're easy for everyone. You want them to be easy enough for you to manage and for your child to do successfully. So consistency is, you know, it says in the workbook, consistency is a key feature, but if it's too hard, if it's too complicated, it's not going to work. Wait, hang on one second. Okay. So third is to allow for flexibility. So you've probably heard me saying this before, but when a bridge is built, an engineer designs a bridge, and it's a very solid, rigid structure, but it's also designed with some flexibility. It's got to be able to move with the wind or move with the currents, and if it doesn't, it will collapse. So systems need to have a little bit of fluidity to them, a little bit of movement to them. And last but not least is we really have to focus on the process. We have a tendency to put a system in place and then say, well, that's the way it is, and because we've got to get an A on that paper or get the chore done or whatever. And with our kids, half the battle is getting them to use a system in the first place, so we really want to focus on that process and reward them for the successes that they have in trying to or using a system instead of only being attached to the outcome of what that system is getting. So that's sort of the key components to systems and structures. And I want to go in and talk about executive function, but before I do, I want to just sort of stop and raise, open it up for discussion for a minute. Any questions or thoughts, comments, what's coming up for anybody?
This is wondering, I think in my case with Katya being as young as she is, it's a little hard. I mean, she buys in to an extent, but only a little bit, and I'm not sure exactly how to gauge what she can do and what she can't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and her buy-in and what she can and can't are sort of different issues. What she can and can't has more to do with, you know, making sure that you're setting a realistic expectation, right? But it's, it doesn't matter how young she is, you can still focus on the process. And for her in particular, because she is so young, we want her to help her see that using a process, thinking through, planning, creating a structure, priorities, organizing, all of that stuff that's hard for her, is as important as what she's trying to achieve. If you can get her to start using processes now, over time, she'll begin to see them as her friend, and she'll begin to adopt them. And that's really what you're looking for. One of the reasons I think that kids with dyslexia, even if they have ADD or other issues, tend to do so well is because they are given structures, and then they see that they work, and they have a chance to practice them again and again. So they're given processes to learn to manipulate the language, to learn how to read, for example.
Okay.
And they practice it, and they do it again and again. And they see, they get success from it. They see that it works. And so then they become kids who are open to other processes. They become open to tell me how to do it, right?
Okay.
And so at her age, Wendrin, you really want her to see that a process works for her and that it's to her advantage to use it, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, questions, comments before we sort of move into the second part? Okay. So the next part of it, and this is, we'll talk about this more throughout the year, and if you have not listened to the webinar on executive function, I really recommend it. Diane and I have one that's on the site, and then Mark Burton did one that's on the site. At some point, take an hour to really dive in a little bit more to executive function and understand it better. The better you understand it long term, the better you'll be able to help your kids. So I'm going to hit the six areas here, but I'm going to do it really on a cursory level, and I would encourage you to examine it further. So does everybody know, everybody knows what I'm talking about in terms of executive function, I think. We've certainly covered that one a lot. There's also a great discussion about it in Sanity School, for those of you who have that. Tom Brown is a researcher out of Yale, whom we love, and what he's created is what he calls the six aspects of a complex syndrome. He calls it the ADD syndrome. And he's labeled the six parts of executive function that are really impaired or challenged for a lot of people with ADD, ADHD. And what you'll find is that some people are challenged in two or three areas, and then some people are challenged in all six. And it just sort of depends on the kid and depends on the severity of the way that ADD is showing up for them. Two of my kids are impacted in all six. One of my kids really is only impacted in about three. And so, of course, it makes it a lot easier because she's not impacted as much by organizing and prioritizing and getting started, which is the first one, activation, right? So a lot of our kids are challenged by activation. That's like figuring out what needs to get done, putting it in order, and then getting going on it. And that can be a huge obstacle for a lot of us and a lot of our kids. The second area is focus, and that's not just about being able to focus on something, but it's about sticking with it, staying with, sustaining the focus, or being able to shift focus from one thing to another. So kids who struggle with focus issues can have a really hard time when the teacher says pencils down and they're already in hyper-focus mode and they're finally locked in on getting some work done, and then the teacher says, nope, time to change. That's why it's so hard to get our kids off of video games and digital things, because they're engaged and the transition can be really difficult. So the third category is effort or alertness. And that's it's not mood and it's not energy. But it has more with sort of regulating your ability to stay awake and alert and attentive and engaged. I remember a therapist once with my daughter when she was about 8 doing this exercise where she had her write down. She almost mapped out what her energy was like in each class of the day, and you could sort of see it like a sine wave. You know, and there were some classes where she was up and engaged and some classes where she was down. And part of it had to do with the cycle of her day, and part of it had to do with the level of energy that the teacher was bringing to the classroom. So if you got a teacher who's mundane or droning on or monotonous, is what I was thinking, or droning on, that's going to be harder for a kid who struggles with effort to stay engaged. The other thing that happens in this area is processing speed, is that ability to hear information, think about what it says, process it, and act on it, whether it's taking notes or speaking, responding to speech, whatever it is. Being able to process the information quickly is a challenge for a lot of us. Processing speed is a big issue for me. So sometimes people will say something and I'll say, hang on a minute, let me just think about that for a second. Because I need to like process the words because I've heard the words, but I haven't actually been able to really make sense of what they mean yet. So when we give our kids directions, if they have trouble with processing speed issues, sometimes it takes them a minute to even process that we said, can you please go pick up that glass for me or get your socks or whatever it is. Two more. Next one is emotion, which is managing frustration, modulating emotions. That's, you know, whether it's anger or sensitivity, just being able to handle the intensity of emotions and frustrations that happen in life. And the last one is memory. It's about using working memory and recalling things. This is a huge challenge area for me. My husband gets so aggravated with me if I don't remember a password. And I don't remember. You know, it's not something that I ever seem to be able to get into my long-term memory. If I don't write it down, it doesn't exist. So kids at school who struggle with working memory tend to have trouble with math, sometimes with writing because you have to hold some information in your head while you're doing something else. These are the kids who maybe can cram for a test and do it if they take the test really quickly, but if they study far enough in advance, they may know the material, and then when they get in there, they can't recall it. They can't remember. And it's not that they don't know the information. It's that they have a hard time accessing that information. It's like the file drawer is stuck. And so those are places where accommodations in the school environment can really make a difference. Sometimes these kids get verbal testing so that what we want is to make sure they know the information, and we may need to test them in a different way to be able to assess it. So those are the six key aspects of executive function. And those are the areas that we tend to be setting structures to address. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have to go. We're being evacuated.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, oh, no. I hope everything's okay. Nothing like being evacuated to just totally change your day. Oy. Okay. So we're sending positive energy Wintrin's way and assuming she's going to be fine. But it wasn't Wintrin with the snow. It was Audrey, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so that's good. Okay, so that's sort of the overall categories of executive function. What are you guys thinking about? What are you noticing? What's coming up? When you look at the aspects of executive function, do you feel like it's something that your kids deal with a lot of those areas, just a few of them?
I would say a lot.
Yeah, okay. I actually have them taped to my kitchen cabinet. I have like a short version of this page taped to my kitchen cabinet because I'm constantly – my son struggles in all six areas, and mm-hmm. I'm constantly just looking at it to – in part, it just reminds me, like, what he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can
yep.
look at it and say, what's
right.
going on here? Which one of these things is the problem? And it helps me have some compassion for the situation. But, you know, it also helps me figure out, okay, where, you know, where does he need more support, or what, you know, it helps me figure out what action I should take when I can identify which of the six things is, or more than one sometimes at a time is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do the same thing. I keep it taped up at my desk, next to my desk, because, and sometimes it helps me remember, you know, like, because the truth is I have terrible memory recall. So I never remember all six of them if I'm not reading them. You know, and I know this stuff pretty well, but I still need the visual reminder. You know, so you keep it up. Have you ever done the exercise with him where you both sit down and you sort of circle where you're challenged in terms of executive function?
Like, have I ever asked my son which of the things are going on for him?
So, uh-huh.
No, I haven't. That's an interesting way.
Not
to
in the moment,
them.
But it's a great exercise to print out. Like, the, you know, have you seen the one with the bubble chart where it's sort of more like a chart?
No, I haven't.
So we have another version of this. Let me see if I can find it. I'll post it. I think it's probably in Homework Headaches is probably where we have it. But and what I like to do as an exercise, I think it was in Sanity School too, is actually give a copy to your kid and you take a copy and both of you sit down for yourself and sort of circle the areas that you struggle with. And if they don't know some of the words, that's fine. Helping them understand that prioritizing is what that means is a great thing to have to teach them, right? So, and you let them just circle everything that they think is hard for them. And it helps them really begin to see, wow, no wonder sometimes it's hard. No wonder I get in trouble. No wonder, you know, this is hard. And it, as you say, it really helps you with the compassion piece, but it gives them some really amazing self-awareness. So what else? Any questions coming up as a response?
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
What if your child doesn't see the problems that they're having?
So give me an example.
Well, for instance, if he has a report he gets at school every day called a hugs report, and a zero is like, you know, doing very poorly on his task. Right now his task is following directions and getting started.
Which is two different things.
Right. I think it's mostly getting started.
Okay.
And so sometimes he'll get a zero and I'll, you know, ask him about it and want to try to talk to him about it. And he usually, you know, denies that there's a problem. Same thing, for example, with the vision therapy. They did a bunch of, you know, testing with him to see what areas he was having difficulty with. And in the typed up report, they noted that at times he would say something like, that was easy, even when it wasn't easy for him or he did poorly on it. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to sit down with the wheel that you're talking about and talk about and get the self-awareness out of it, but it seems like I'm anticipating what normally happens is just denial and, you know, not even seeing that there's a problem.
So where do you think the denial's coming from?
I don't know. Maybe insecurity.
Okay.
Self-consciousness, maybe.
What do you think he's self-conscious about?
I don't know. He seems to have this great need for attention unless it's anything negative.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's you know, he gets very self-conscious.
Well, that's, you would have to say that's pretty normal, wouldn't you? That's pretty typical.
Yeah, I do think it is typical, but I don't know, it seems like he's taken it to
an art,
a higher level.
Right. So, and I know we've talked about this some before, but you know, if you had to say, how am I doing in terms of equating that ability to make mistakes without being wrong for them in my house? How would you say you're doing?
I think pretty good. We're trying to be extremely supportive and helpful and not critical. And
so,
you know,
but does he have a tendency to make him to own it or deny it?
Deny.
Mm-hmm. So what I would guess, and I don't, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but one of the places that I would look is to see, is he, does he have the tendency to deny, because he wants to be right because he's tired of being wrong all the time. So no matter how positive you are with when he's wrong, is he getting redirected constantly?
Yes, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's just, it's a place to look, is that when a kid is getting constantly redirected, it is not uncommon for them to do what I call defensive dishonesty. It's, they start making themselves look right even when they're not, because they're just tired of being wrong all the time. So that's a place to look. But this exercise actually, and I'm just putting it up on the forum, gives you an opportunity where you can sit down with it and circle it. And if he says, no, I don't have a problem with that, then you're like, oh, really? I struggle with it here. Or, and, you know, I remember that time when the teacher, I know this is something that, I know you're doing better, but I know this is hard for you. You got to admit this is hard, right? Like, and you don't want to make him wrong for it, but you want to help him validate. The place to focus is not on whether it's a problem for him, but whether it's something he's struggling with that's hard for him. So that you can focus on when he's doing it well, like, look how great that is, because I know that's hard for you to do that. So if he's working in school, for example, and getting started, and activation is one of the key areas that's really hard for him, then when he's successful, it's even more kudos, right? He gets even more boon for it, because it's not just doing something that's expected, it's doing something expected that we know is hard for him.
Mm-hmm.
So the opportunity here is to acknowledge and validate him. So it's not about looking to make him wrong in an area, but helping him identify where he's doing pretty well, considering this is really hard for you. Does that distinction make a difference?
Yeah. Yes, and I will definitely look at what you posted so I can print it out.
Yeah, it's a really good, I think it's a great way to do it. And you just print it out. And as I say, some of the language may be somewhat sophisticated for his age. But it's okay if he doesn't get all of it. You know, you just want him to get the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And get him to begin to see, these are all the things that it takes just to get a homework assignment turned in. You have to be able to manage all six of these things. And that's a lot. That's hard. And, you know, even I still have trouble with some of these areas. And I'm a grown-up.
Right.
It can be really, really powerful for him to begin to own it and help with that buy-in. So, and the other thing is to remember that these are conversations to have over time. You know, like you were saying, you've got it up in your kitchen, right? So when something happens, you can sort of educate them and say, it's really hard to stick with it and stay with it when you're starting to get bored, isn't it? that effort is really hard to do. And so it gives you an opportunity to begin to educate them about the self-awareness that's going to be required for them to manage their own ADD and, or whatever the issues are that they're bringing. Does that resonate?
Yeah, I can't imagine getting to that point, but hopefully.
Well, he's young still. But if you, like, give me an example of something that might happen in the kitchen that might have an executive function direct, you know, connection to it. While you're hanging out in the kitchen having dinner or after school or something. When he gets called out on something.
I guess a lot of homework happens in the kitchen, so maybe sometimes, you know, working on homework and then all of a sudden just getting up and doing something else.
Perfect. Great example. So then you can say, that's the kind of thing where you can say, it is really hard to stick with it, isn't it? Look at that. This is, because sometimes homework after you've been doing it for a while gets boring, doesn't it? So, and it may make sense for him to get up and go take a snack and come back. He may need that break, right? That may be a strategy that he's using to be able to get back to sustaining focus, right?
Right.
Or to sustain the effort. Or it may be that he's just impulsive and he got distracted by something and he got up and walked away. And so then you can sort of play with which of those is going on. So which do you think is, where do you think it's showing up and you're struggling with it today? Is this about sticking with it or is this, did you get distracted? Oh, you got distracted. Okay, well, let's get you back on track. Matter of fact, no judgment on it, right?
Right.
But you can do it in simple language to help him begin to start becoming aware of his behavior and that there's actually something behind his behavior.
And
so,
that he can also help himself.
Yeah. Yeah, once he begins to understand what's going on, he can begin to help himself.
Okay.
So there are two of you today. So, and we've got a few minutes left. We can either take sort of a quick laser dive on each of the topics that you've taken aim on, or we can just choose one. Anybody have a preference?
Well, I just talked a lot to you, so if you want to go ahead and talk.
Well, so let's actually wrap up yours. So go back to what you were taking aim on. Following the homework schedule, right. So what's the aha from this conversation in terms of following the homework schedule?
Focusing on the process and not only the outcome.
Okay. So if you're taking aim on following the homework schedule and you're focusing on the process, right? So collect a little information. What do you know about what's going on when you're trying to stick with homework?
He would just rather be doing a lot of other things. And also the other thing is that he has started to take medication, a second dose of medication. He used to take it after school, and now he's taking it earlier in the day. So it's wearing off during homework time, which is making things
worse.
Okay,
so medicines are wearing off. He'd rather be doing other things. He's having a really hard time with sustaining effort and focus. Right?
Right.
Is his challenge activating there as well?
Yes.
Okay. So, and it sounds like getting up and walking away, so he's also struggling with the action piece, with sort of self-regulating his impulsivity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you've got four of the six executive function areas being impacted. And that's not to mention what might happen if he actually tries to remember what they said at school today.
Oh, yes.
Right? And then he's trying to manage his frustration about the fact that he doesn't want to do it.
Right.
So in that simple taking aim of trying to follow the homework schedule, he is struggling with all six aspects of executive function. Right?
Yes.
So if we look at the cornerstones and say, okay, so if we want to plan for action around that, is there anything else that you would want to do in terms of activating the brain? Because he's already got the second dose of medicine, but he's getting it earlier. Is there anything else that that could help in terms of that piece?
Maybe maybe changing the scene. I know we've talked about this before. Trying to limit distractions.
Mhm. Okay. So one place to look would be to limit some distraction because we know it's hard for him. Do you feel like, is he getting a protein snack? Is he getting a little exercise or movement? Is he getting something to engage his brain that way?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
He and his therapist built in some activity time beforehand.
Great. Okay. So you've sort of done what you can to activate the brain, but limiting distractions could still be effective.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So from a parenting positively perspective, what is this, you know, understanding executive function offer there?
We try to, you know, talk positively about, you know, let's just do this part. You know, we don't sit down and try to do it all at once.
Okay. So you're trying to set realistic expectations. You're trying to break it up.
Right.
How do you feel like you're doing in terms of sort of playing to his strengths or celebrating what he's doing well?
Could probably do better.
Okay, so that's a place to look. So if we know he's challenged in all six areas, then some positive parenting might be really helpful here, right? Acknowledging for him this is hard. Like, one of the worst things we do for our kids is they're sitting there struggling with homework and we say, it's easy. Well, it's not easy. It's really hard for him to muster all the different executive functions required to sit down and do homework at the end of the day. He's 9 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
So setting those realistic expectations and then really being really coming in with positive parenting could help because you've already got a structure in place. So what you're really taking aim on is how to keep using the structure you've got, right?
Right.
And if you feel like it's a realistic structure that's got his buy-in, that's got all those components we talked about earlier, then and it's sort of realistic in terms of its expectations, then the place you've really got to play with is the positive parenting. That's where you can really influence its success. Does that resonate for you?
It does. And I think what is getting both of us frustrated is that a lot of times, you know, he'll go ahead and he'll do a good job of getting started and completing it. But then it's when I have to look at the work and then I need him to make corrections.
How important is that?
You know, from a grading standpoint, you know, if he doesn't fix it, then he's going to get a lower grade. And his teacher also likes to see what he's struggled with and had to fix to know what areas he's having problems with.
Okay. I guess what I'm asking is that something that needs to be your job?
Who else's job is
that
going to
be? The school's job. If she wants to see what he's struggling with, I mean, are you really expected to check all his homework before it goes in?
Yes.
Okay. Do you feel like that's a reasonable expectation on you?
Well, I don't feel like it's really working because we keep seeing the same problems over and over.
Sounds to me like it's putting you in a tough situation. You got a lot going on already. You got a lot of executive function deficits you're managing at a very difficult time of day. He needs you to be the positive, you know, affirming, celebratory reinforcer, and you end up being the corrector.
Right. But, and I can also sense his teacher's frustration in that, you know, a lot of things that she talks to him about are not, you know, getting changed or seeing improvement.
Are they reasonable?
I know.
Expectations?
Yes, like starting
is
a sentence with a capital letter.
Say it again.
What? Like starting a sentence with capital letter and using punctuation. You know.
Well,
basic
my 14-year-old still doesn't use punctuation. I mean, it is a 9-year-old. Punctuation's really hard. It's all he can do to get the thoughts out, and to write, and then the motor coordination of writing them down, and then add a visual processing issue on top of it. Like, yeah, it would be nice, but is it, if you're trying to get him to do absolutely everything at once, he's never going to feel success because it's never going to be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say he doesn't need to learn punctuation. But if we can, you know, focus on what the other stuff is or what the important part of the lesson is, and then come back with the, oh, by the way, you know, let's remember next time, let's try to remind you to use capitals, or rather than punctuation, it's like maybe before he starts one assignment, I'm just going to remind you capital letters, or I'm going to remind you periods or commas, and, you know, help him slowly learn to do it. But if the exercise is punctuation, then that's what he needs to be working on. But if the exercise is writing, then let's correct him on what he's trying to learn, not necessarily his ability to use every skill he's learned and apply it consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's getting so much negative that at some
right.
point he's going to say, it doesn't matter what I do, it's never good enough.
Right. Okay, we found our focus.
Okay. So what are you getting from that? What are you taking?
Positive parenting, because feeling bad about it is not going to help anyone, and it's not going to make him use capital letters the next time. Or
right.
You know.
Yeah. I love that. Feeling bad about it is not going to make them use capital letters the next time. But, and I'm not kidding you. I mean, it's now my son is 14 and he's in high school, and now he's really got to pay attention to punctuation and capitalization because the teachers are starting to ask for it, right? But when he was 12 and 10, I was happy just to get him to write anything. And now he's ready to apply those skills. But he wasn't ready to apply them when he was also trying to learn all these other things. Writing mm-hmm. is the most complex thing we ask kids to do. So sometimes we have to break it down for them. So does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like there's still some hesitation, but that's okay. This is complex stuff.
Yeah, I just feel badly for him that you know, he's being graded on and compared to other kids that a lot of this stuff is automatic.
Yeah. So I love that you feel bad for him. And I know that it's hard and it hurts. But that's exactly, I want you to feel that feeling. I want you to have compassion for his experience. Because if he gets from you, I don't care what the other kids are doing. Look how great you're doing. That's what he needs. It'd be great if he could get it from the teacher, too. And you've got all year to educate her.
Right.
But I want him to get it from you. You know, make a joke of the capitalization and the punctuation. Agree to make it, put a structure in place where you remind him at the beginning of each one and make laugh about it. Isn't
yeah,
it crazy? They want you to write this and think about things to write and remember to capitalize and punctuate all at the same time. That is so much to remember. Right? Help them not feel wrong for having that working memory challenge. Get clear on what the object of the lesson is and let them learn that.
Yeah,
so what action
reminder
do you want to take?
Positive parenting during homework.
Great. And how do you want to hold yourself accountable to it?
Well, instead of being the corrector afterwards, I want to be like the proactive reminder. So I'll make, a short little whiteboard checklist that, you know, he can just remember to look at instead of me being criticizing about it.
Great. I love it. So proactive reminder, whiteboard that you remind him to look at. Don't expect him to remember. Okay, before you get started, let's just go through. Remember, these are the things to make sure you try to pay attention to. And then when he's done, I want you to be the celebrator. Okay?
Okay.
What do you need from us?
I think I just got it.
Good. So, will you share something in the forum after you've had a homework session where you've really focused on celebrating what he's doing right and just share something with us about how it went?
Sure.
Great. Good. And I know this is hard stuff. You know, I want to just be really clear, Megan, this is really hard stuff. But this is the core. This is about your relationship with him. And we can never, ever let the teacher's need for him to do something or perform a certain way interfere with your relationship with him.
Okay.
Primary. If he's got to know you're in his court no matter what. Okay.
Okay.
Yay. Audrey, any sort of closing things for you? Any ahas from you today or any commitments?
I'm torn. I just want to ask, the person who left, I actually didn't catch who that was. Was that by any chance one of our California friends?
Yeah, I'm in San Bernardino. I'm back now. We just
you're back.
I'm glad you're back. I saw in the news there's an active shooter situation down there, and I was worried maybe that's why you were evacuated. So.
It's about a mile from where I live.
Oh, sweetie.
So, you know, we're all going home now.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just crazy.